Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? Finally.
They finally gave me my own podcast.
Jeremy comes to the Low Blows Network. One of the biggest legends of the Irish wrestling scene, Jerry talks to his wrestling friends and beyond about the hobbies in their lives that they're most nerdy about in Talk Nerdy To Me.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is now 2020. We are back. Talk Nerdy To Me is back on your airwaves. And I'm your host, Jerry. I hope you're having a fantastic new year. I know I am. It's my birthday today and I'm absolutely loving the fact that I'm back in the studio recording another podcast. And I am with that lovely blanket bearded man, Dave. Dave, how the hell are you?
It's been 2 months since we've been here in the studio.
It's been three fucking months, Dave.
Oh God, you're right.
It's been three months, yeah.
I forgot December was a month for a second.
I felt like you split up with me.
Excuse me, you're the one who did two shows away from the studio.
It's always my fault, isn't it? It's always my fault.
By the way, on the notes you brought up earlier. And so on. Happy birthday.
God damn it, Dave.
What?
But thank you very much. I appreciate
that.
Of
course.
I'm certainly feeling the love today.
Yeah.
Didn't get a happy birthday from my own son, but you know, he's only nine, so it doesn't matter.
So you're going to get a bazillion belated birthdays now because of this, because of the news I consume.
Probably, yeah, because this it's getting recorded on a Monday. It's not going to be out till a Friday, so yeah, there'll probably be a few.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Dave. But Dave, God, now we're in 2020 now. How's the new year?
It's been grand so far. I mean, you know, getting back into the swing of things now. It almost feels like a weird, like, too sweet. Like, if it, like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, it's a new decade.
Yeah, it's brand new decade.
Yeah. So it's like, there's a lot of looking back and from the last 10 years, I suppose. But now, I suppose it's a good thing. Like, we could probably go on for ages about what happened the last 10 years in terms of our own interests. Like, but
oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. You know, with the likes of, you know, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, Star Wars.
Yeah.
There's been so much that's been happening over the last 10 years. Yeah, the Marvel MCU. Mm. We won't really talk about the DC because that's shite.
Mostly shite.
It's mostly shite. There's one or two good things about it. But, you know, they're coming along. You know, their TV is amazing.
Absolutely.
TV, the multiverse stuff that they're doing is fantastic.
I know, yeah. We were just talking about it before.
The sheer amount of guys from the past coming into that is amazing.
So you never know. Like, maybe that'll develop into the movies like Marvel, but that's optimistic thinking.
Well,
at the same time.
Marvel can own the movies. DC can own the TV. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
But ladies and gentlemen, it is our first podcast back. And I did say that we were going to have a Star Trek special. And in the studio today, we have the guys from the USS Kilcullen. We have Jono, we have Frank, and we have Robbie. Lads, welcome back to the show. Welcome to the show, Robbie. You haven't been here before.
No, first time, Jerry.
Yeah, and are we excited now for what's coming this week, lads?
What's coming this week, Jerry?
Is there something coming?
It's my birthday.
It's your birthday.
Actually, I'm not going to wish you a happy birthday till Friday.
Yeah, let's do it live.
You can't.
Happy birthday, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
This goes out on Friday, so belated happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Felicitations on a successful rotation around your local solar mass.
There we go.
So, do you want to know how long he was practicing?
I'd imagine he was
rolling that in his head for a few minutes.
But obviously, lads, this week's a very important week for Star Trek fans because we have the brand spanking new Star Trek Picard series, and it's out on Thursday. Now, I originally thought it was out on Friday, but it's actually out on Thursday.
Well, it's out on Thursday in the States.
In the States, okay. So
America still gets everything first.
So we'll have it on Friday, then?
We'll have it on Friday.
We'll have it on Friday.
Okay, right. Yeah. So have you got your Amazon Prime?
They did get me the whole marketing strategy. I do pay for Amazon Prime. I did buy it because they had bought Picard. So they did get me. They got my, what is it, €6? Actually, I got a deal for a 1 year when they first announced it. So I think I have like £50 for the year.
That's a great deal.
Yeah. So I went, oh, you're going to have Picard and I'm going to have to watch that and the first day it comes out. So here's my money. Okay. Damn you and your marketing strategy.
It has to be watched. You know, it's been very difficult for Star Wars fans to watch The Mandalorian unless you're watching it illegally. And I don't watch it illegally. I watch it very legally.
No spoilers. I haven't legally seen the last two episodes.
Oh, my. Oh, you haven't... Okay, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's avoided them so far, because...
It's out there.
Just to stray off topic for a second, it's the best thing to happen to Star Wars since the original trilogy.
This is the way I explain it, lads. I explained this about Rogue One as well. It's the most Star Wars since Star Wars.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I can describe it, especially The Mandalorian, because
that's a nice.
I think, lads, you just give the keys of Star Wars to Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni and just say, right, lads, you just go and do what you want.
Here's a blank check.
As a Star Trek fan, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Can we get security in here, Dave?
Security.
Oh, I don't know, they're all going downstairs.
those two second words after the word star, sometimes they get interchanged, you know.
Well, even
they do in my head, anyway. I love both of them.
People even get them wrong, especially like Star Trek. And it's very important that it's Star Trek. The sheer amount, and it's more Irish people that are here than anywhere else. They call it Star Trek, and I said, lads, it's not track, it's Trek.
Star Trek.
Like my own mother says track. Oh, sometimes.
No, even my father said to me the other day, you're still doing that Star Wars thing. the guys, they're all doing the Star Wars thing. And I was like, no, we built a bridge from Star Trek. I've only been watching it 30 years, but it's okay.
My favorite bit of explaining the bridge is, why would you build a bridge? What's a bridge? Like, is that the thing that goes over a river? You just got to look at it and go,
do you want to tell them what the lovely people of Dublin City Convention Centre thought we needed to store between Dublin Comic Con and Worldcon?
Oh, yeah. So you may recall this, Jerry. We were at Dublin City Comic Con this past August, and the Cúchulainn actually had the very proud honour of being invited to Worldcon this year, which was held the weekend after. Well, it started on the Wednesday.
Them, it starts on the, well, for the people volunteering, it started on the Tuesday. But yeah, for people, if you had an advance ticket, came in on Wednesday and then Thursday, and there's all sorts of different, you know, levels of tickets. But yeah.
So the Cúchulainn Bridge set was invited along. Yeah. We had said, yep, we'll happily open the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, give everyone the full USS Cúchulainn Bridge set experience. This was brilliant. And essentially, the Comic-Con guys had communicated, the guys from Cúchulainn need to store the bridge set, because they're going to be here, they're going to come in on Tuesday, set up the bridge set, and open it on the Friday. And the Worldcon guys said, yep, that's no bother, we'll communicate with
DCC.
CDD, the Convention Centre.
Convention Centre, anyway, yeah.
So the guys, through some communication error, through some mix-up, through some whatever...
Well, the use of just one word.
Yeah, they forgot the word set. So the words were, they need to store the bridge. Now, on the second floor of the Convention Centre in Dublin is a model of the Sean O'Casey Bridge.
Which was the backdrop for the Hugo Awards.
Yeah.
It's the Hugo Awards, right? Yeah. So the Hugo Awards, their set piece for their stage during the awards was the harp, the Sean O'Casey Bridge. Yeah. So, in actual fact, for the convention center...
Yeah, I think they'd set aside something like half a square meter for us to store
in. Because they were told that there's a bridge coming, but there was actually two.
Wow.
And we were one of them. So they got very confused when we said, we've got the captain's chair and the console and our lights and our our curtained backdrops. And they're like, what do you mean? Where's all this going? I haven't been told about this. We told about the bridge. Yeah, that's up on the stage. And like, no, this is the Star Trek bridge. I thought that was the Star Trek bridge. No, yeah. that's the Worldcon science fiction convention bridge. We're specifically Star Trek. I'm very confused.
Now, in fairness, to give the guys in the convention center their dues...
Oh, they were wonderful.
As soon as they had figured out the mix-up, they had it sorted within about 20 minutes. Yeah. Like, it was done, dusted.
They gave us a corner.
Yeah.
And it was done.
I think the biggest worry for them was, we have to hoover the floor. We don't have any floor space that's hoovered yet. So as soon as they hoovered a section of floor, then we just put all our stuff over there, just put it all over, put it on pallets and wheeled it into the corner and just left it there. It was literally for a 24-hour period of Monday, because we took it down on Sunday and then couldn't do anything on Monday, and myself and Robbie were going in on Tuesday straight away to set it up for Worldcon. So it was literally a 24-hour period and nobody was using that space. But yeah, the big worry was, I don't know, where can we put it? I haven't hoovered the floor yet.
Oh, the cleaners have hoovered this 2 meter section. Get it in there.
Yeah,
now.
yeah. Put it over there. No, everyone, once that communication thing was figured out, because it was all wide eyes, bridge, and like everyone except of course people listening to this podcast, when you'd say bridge, they'd be able to discern what sort of bridge you're talking about.
Yeah,
a bridge is something that goes over a river to most people.
Mm. Well, when you talk about Comic-Con, you know, somebody says the bridge set.
or the Star Trek bridge, you're going to know exactly what you're talking about. You know, you're not going to think of, oh, this little bridge or like.
Well, in fairness, the bridge, the Sean O'Casey bridge, I think was 8 foot long. I think that, yeah, that model was 8 foot long. It was beautifully lit. Like the actual Hugo Awards staging was green and white and against the black backdrop. The lighting for that particular set was beautiful as well. But yeah, the big confusion about what a Star Trek bridge was.
Again, in fairness to them, solved pretty quickly.
Yeah,
so,
no, they're a wonderful place to be. It's a great place for Comic-Con to be. We just love going.
And it was great to have WorldCon as well then last year, you know, because it was the first time in Ireland.
Yeah.
No, it's going 75 years.
79? Oh, I can't remember.
75 years that convention's going. Well, and it goes from city to city around the world. So
For it to finally come here, it's something special.
Yeah. Remind us in the comments below as to exactly which WorldCon we were at.
It was... World
it's a number. It's
2019.
Numbers,
it? I can't remember what number it was.
Well, WorldCon 2019, but
I think it was 75.
Was it 75?
I'm not sure.
75th anniversary.
But in fairness to them, and in fairness to the committee, now this is another one for the committee. They've been working on getting WorldCon here for 7 years.
Yeah. Ever since I've seen the DCC in the convention center, there's always been this stall saying get WorldCon here.
It's a big effort to get it here. And the big thing as well is I can't remember the numbers of who came in. I think it's 5,000 people or something like
5,000 week long tickets were sold.
5,000 week long tickets. Less than 1,000 of them were Irish. So these people are Americans and international people that travel around the world to come to these events. So it's a very big thing, especially for the committee working so hard. It's like, well, we want to show you our city. We want to show you the, you know, and Worldcon sides more towards the literary science fiction end of things. So they want to, you know, Ireland is a country of scholars and writers, and so they really want, like James Bacon and the entire team there, Helen Montgomery, really trying to bring everybody over here. So it was a big honor for them. It was a big
and again,
payoff for a lot of hard work.
We would be remiss if we didn't throw out a massive shout out to Elaine Jennings for all her hard work doing
and all her and all her confusions.
Yes, as to, but she was our coordinator for the weekend. She was the events coordinator, and she was just fantastic. Her and her crew were just amazing.
Yeah,
the whole lot of
things always go so much better when you've got somebody who actually knows what they're doing.
Yeah, or knows how to ask the right questions.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
To get the right piece of information across, because there's all sorts of stuff that we were asked for. You know, accessibility wise and things like that. So we had, there was an awful lot of things we had to
health
sort
and safety
out.
Statement.
Yeah, we had to have to do a health and safety statement this time around, and certain modifications had to be made, and we made ourselves as accessible as we can, while still trying to be something that stands out, looks amazing, and the difference between ours and some that you might find in the UK or elsewhere. It's very much an interactive experience with us. You know, that's one of the things we were commented on. I think the guys from Glasgow were asking
us to move. A guy from Glasgow came over to me and asked if we could bring the bridge set over, and we were saying, probably not.
if only he knew the logistics
of even getting it moving around Dublin, never mind bringing it anywhere.
It involves
else,
a 12-foot trailer and lots of driving through rush air traffic.
But WorldCon was a fantastic experience for us because the amount of people that came over to us from different nationalities who were, you know, woed by the bridge session. Whereas with Dublin Comic Con, it was very much about getting a photograph on the chair, and that was part of WorldCon as well. It was much more WorldCon. They were fascinated by the workings of the bridge set itself. And
we had long conversations.
You know, the Artemis bridge simulator that we had running on it. Like, so, yeah, it was a fascinating weekend for
us as well. I think we opened up the Astrogator, which is where half the computer brain system of the Artemis computer system is in, where, you know, Stephen O'Neill built that rack of computers with people from, there was a guy from Israel, I remember, and they were just fascinated. They wanted, all the access hatches I've built into the console, they wanted to open them up and take pictures, so we were lifting up the Astrogator and going, yeah, it's run by, here's the screen, the cables, and it runs through here, and then it go around the front and drop down the front part, and, you know, we got two microcomputers now and a touch screen for the first time, and, you know, all that type of thing. They were more interested in how it had been built. There were makers, and they were more interested, what's that? And, how did you do that? And how did you figure that out? So it was different to, you know, someone wanted to come up and sit in the chair and go, yeah.
Well, obviously you do get people like that, but to see the interest in the inner workings of everything that you've done. That had to have been special as well. It's like, okay, people obviously appreciate the bridge, obviously, because it's very, very popular. Every time I've gone to Comic-Con, it's been hugely popular. But after people go up and say, I'd like to see the inner workings of this, and how did you do this, and how did you make that? That has to be something special as well. Yeah. Because people are actually really appreciating the hard work that you've put into
it. Which is great. You know, and listen to the previous podcast with us and Jerry Soule to hear our stories of people who have visited the bridge. But but that's the thing. We're a cornerstone, really. Now we're kind of like a navigating point.
Yeah.
For Comic-Con, you know, if somebody says, "Where's your table?" Oh, I'm just in front of the Cuchulain Bridge set, Star Trek Bridge set. You know, so we're actually a cornerstone.
It's a meeting point, though. I'll meet you at the bridge. Yeah, yeah. I'll see you there in 15 minutes.
It's a great thing to say, though. I'll meet you on the bridge.
I'll meet you at the Star Trek thing.
Star Trek. Bloody Star Trek.
We're not trekkers. We're trackers.
We're trackers.
Actually, it was the first. This is the first year. Carl and the guys from DCC have actually asked us, "You're coming, right?" Yeah. Usually we're like, can we have that space, because we need the big space, because we have, you know, a lot of gear and we want to put on the best show, and can we please? And it was this time around, Carl's like, "You're coming, right? You'll be there? Grand. Okay, you'll have your usual spot now."
It was actually over in Birmingham. We'd met Carl over in Birmingham.
Yeah,
he was over enjoying the convention with a lot of us. I had started Destination Star Trek, and it was very much a case of, we just bumped into him randomly in the pub in the Hilton on the Saturday night, and he's like...
And he hung around with us for ages.
By the way, you are coming this year, right? Yeah, of course we are, dude.
I have to say now, in terms of Birmingham, in terms of Star Trek, we're going to get into the main topic of the pod now, but for me, Birmingham was an experience and a half. It was like nothing I had experienced before. I'd gone to Celebration London, which was the Star Wars
event,
a couple of years ago, and that was just pure chaos.
Yeah.
Absolute chaos. People were sleeping in queues for 8 or 9 hours. I did it. I had to do it myself just to go and see a panel.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut across you there for telling the story, but that sounds very much like San Diego Comic-Con. San Diego Comic-Con's like that. I remember the story I tell is, like, when we were there in 2009, we only heard about it afterwards, and we thought it was absolutely nuts. For Hall H, or the biggest, Hall 20 or Hall H, can't remember which one it is, people were queuing for 24 hours for James Cameron's Avatar announcement back in 2009. But you're not allowed queue at the convention center until the day of the panel. So they organize on social media to meet somewhere else in city. And then at midnight, they all troop up to the convention center and start queuing there. So they have to sit. But see, his panel wasn't until 2:45, 3:45 that day. So they have to sit through all those other panels just for that announcement.
Also in San Diego, in the summer heat, in July.
All of that.
Yeah.
All of that.
I did it myself now in London. It was done ever so slightly differently to that. You got in, there was specific queues. So if you wanted this panel or that panel, and it was just for that day, whatever was on that day. So if you wanted to go and see, let's say, the Mark Hamill panel, you did a disc queue. And then if you wanted the Carrie Fisher panel, you're in disc queue, and so on and so forth. So you had to queue overnight if you wanted to be guaranteed a ticket. So we did. We had pillows and sleeping bags and stuff. And this was not comfortable. I was like, I don't like this at all. And it was nothing like that in Birmingham.
No, nothing like that.
It's
different.
A little bit more, you know, a little bit busy when you're trying to get to one of the panels. But no, I absolutely loved it. Fantastic. And then the very first one that we went to was actually the Cuchulain panel. It was fairly popular. A lot of people there.
That was another nice thing that we got there. We got it.
That's right. 2019 was great, wasn't it?
We got a panel.
It was a great year for
us.
So we had a panel at Destination, and that was a bit of fun. And it was an early morning panel, and yet there was a few people there. And
it's a good few people.
Yeah, thanks
there.
To everybody who came to like the first panel of the morning or something. Yeah. That's what we were very first thing that day or something.
I absolutely loved it. You know, it was most of the stuff I kind of knew because I know you guys, and I'm with you guys now for a while now. But there's so many other people there. I was like, okay, they were genuinely interested, but it was a mad dash. Literally, as soon as the panel was like, right, we're going to see Picard? Yeah, okay. Gone. It was like, where's Jerry? Yeah. It was just a cloud of Jerry there. And it was just, let's go up and see Picard there. Yeah. And that, of course, is the reason we're here today. What a
crowd at that.
Wow.
Now, I've been doing conventions over 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I've been to a lot of I gave up on the guest talks a long time ago because you probably see it on YouTube later and it's easier to watch. The sound quality will be better depending on who's operating their phone or is it a proper camera. But I went, decided Patrick Stewart. I missed him in 2001 in Blackpool many years ago. And I said, well, I'm not going to miss him this time. And that was also in an aircraft hangar type of thing. There was the Norbreck Castle in Blackpool. But this time around, we had... How many people did they squeeze into that curtained off section of that convention
center? A couple of thousand anyway.
A couple.
There's a lot five, more. Maybe five.
No, yeah. that hall can hold 8,000 people.
Yeah, I think there was seated. I think there was closer to 10.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was full to brim.
Yes. Well, yeah. Standing room only.
I'll put it to you this way. I came in just as the panel was starting and there was nobody in the convention center.
Anyone who was attending was at Patrick's talk. Now, we were down the very back.
I got a seat.
Well, you could understand. Apparently, there's a new show coming out, so everybody was interested in finding out what that
and
was
it's
going to be.
Unlike previous panels, because I've been to DST now, this was my fifth or sixth DST at this point, and like most of the time, Pat Stew is on stage. He's on stage with LeVar or with Brent or with the TNG cast. This is the first time I've got to see Sir Pat Stew on stage on his own.
Yeah. Mm. I got he was a dot in the distance.
Yeah.
But when we all stood up for the standing ovation and him coming on stage, I got a little bit choked up.
Yeah.
I have to say it was like, oh, this is he's miles away, but this is a little bit of a moment. You know, there he is, someone I've been watching since I was seven on telly.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly there he is, the real life person is, just a half a mile away in front of me.
Well, I have to say, I kind of did feel the same way myself. I'd never seen the man in person. I was like, I've always wanted to see him. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to go and see one of his plays, and especially when he was doing that kind of partnership when you did a couple of plays with Ian McKellen, which I thought would be fantastic to go.
I would
see.
Love to see Waiting for Godot.
Yeah, oh, yes, absolutely.
It's out there. Like, it was broadcast in cinemas and stuff. The way they do that,
yeah.
So somebody has it on a Blu-ray disc. Some post-production facility has it on a shelf somewhere.
Oh, it's out there.
I'd love to see it. Post in the comments below if you if you know if there's a link of Waiting for Godot with Ian McKellen and Sir Patrick Stewart.
Remind them, they're still commenting on the bridge. So let's
Very good. But obviously, we went to see Sir Patrick, and the main reason that he was there was he was promoting the brand spanking new series Star Trek Picard, which is out.
What's that? What's that?
My Amazon Prime is primed.
We're primed and ready to go. It's out this Thursday in the US, and it's out Friday everywhere else that has Amazon Prime. But lads, what are our expectations here for this series?
On a scale of 1 to 10, mine is at about 20.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that myself.
Every single time I've seen a trailer or a photograph or, some little new piece of information, the expectation levels are just... rising all the time. I know Jonah doesn't like spoilers, but the most recent one was a screenshot of the Enterprise D, which makes
the Enterprise D.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
We wouldn't really call that spoilerish.
It's not. It's obviously a look back. It's a flashback, it's a memory or it's whatever. New rendering of the Enterprise. Yeah. Oh my God! It looked.
Fantastic. It'd be proper HD. It'd be like trying to render Babylon 5 today. Could you imagine what the special effects of B5 would be today? It'd be amazing.
Absolutely fantastic.
I mean, when it was announced first, it was, oh, that's fantastic. And then the first trailer came out and it was like, there's Patrick Stewart. And then, the trailer goes along and all of a sudden there's 7 of 9. You're going, what?
Yeah.
I want to see this now.
I think
Jerry Ryan's new portrayal of Seven, they've taken the flagpole out.
Yes.
And she's now, badass. I think they're looking forward to that. That's going to be pretty cool.
I think she was always badass, but she was more like a reserved badass.
Yeah,
there was never hair out of place, whereas now the hair is kind of like tousled. And
yeah, exactly.
She's messing it up.
A bit more human.
Yes. Now, oh, absolutely.
The Borg has been...
Well, I mean, wouldn't you be if you're living in a galaxy full of sentient beings for 20 years?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah. I don't know if they've said it as yet, whether they're going to be calling her Seven or Annika.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
She has to be Seven.
Not necessarily.
Would she not have, retaken her human name? She looks a lot more human, yeah.
I'd kind of like it if there was something, a little kind of weird mix between the two, a nickname of Sev or Seven, I think those who know her well.
I don't know. I'd guess she'd still be called Seven because Annika was an older life. She, she was taken when a child. So that child disappeared. So she lived most of her adult rebirth as being called Seven. So unless she calls herself something,
I just like to disagree with Jonathan. Her new name is. I'm going to go say no. She's going to reclaim her humanity and call herself Annika. Like, you know,
I'm going to go completely
Dave,
off
Dave,
the fence.
Get to security in here. There's about to be a fight here now. I didn't think it started this early, but
they're lurking at the door.
They're at the door, ready to
I'm
go.
I'm going completely off the reservation here and saying her new name is Bob.
Bob.
Well, you know,
Bob of Nine.
Well, yeah. The doctor took the really mundane name.
Joe.
No offense to people named Joe.
It took you 8 years to settle on Joe.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so. But,
right, so obviously we were at that panel. We heard him speak about how it was fantastic to be coming back to the role, how it was something that he initially was thought he was never going to do, and then he was like, okay, well, I've been convinced now, let's go ahead and do
it.
He
was reserved. He wasn't
he turned it
on
down.
Board.
Yeah. He turned it down twice before he took the role.
Really had to.
The fact that he is doing it now, and he has done it, and we're probably going to get 2 to 3 more seasons out of this.
Well, season 2.
They've already
announced.
Been renewed for season 2, which is fantastic. But just to hear him talk about doing it and being on set and have this new crew, you know, in terms of...
With nods to the older.
Exactly, yeah. So what do we think so far? You know, I don't want to get too... I don't want to say I don't know any spoilers.
Is this where we do spoiler speculation?
I don't,
not spoilers, because we don't know. But it's speculation. So
potential once
it's
spoiler okay, alert.
Once it's okay with everyone around this table.
If you're listening in 2021 and you haven't seen the show.
Or if we want to delay the podcast release till Monday when you've seen the show already.
Well, we don't know anything that anybody else doesn't know anyway.
Exactly,
so anything we say is pure speculation.
Yes, exactly. So we're going purely by the trailers. Now, I know, Jono, you're not a big trailer fan, though. You're not. But you did see the one at the DSC.
Yeah.
So what did... When you seen that trailer... Because... You're not some you don't like
the floor spoilers. Became really interesting.
Yes.
I was look at this. No, I did. I had to watch it. No, of course the I did. What I had to watch the first trailer, and I watched the first trailer. I didn't watch it for a number of days. Everyone's talking about it, but I managed to avoid trailer spoilers.
Yeah,
because that's a thing as well. So I watched the first one. I know you just asked me about the current one, but the first one I watched it, I made sure I was sitting at home watching it on my big TV in my home theater. And I played it once, I played it twice, I played it 4 times. And like seeing Sir Pat on the stage, as soon as,
ask one more thing there?
What?
So you watched it 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
The second time, did you give out yourself for watching it and having spoilers for the second?
Yeah. I
that kind of spoiler phobia.
It was a predestination paradox.
It started already.
Oh, I know.
So, but the point I'm trying to get to is the end, the last shot with Brent and Data. Tears coming down.
Which
my face.
They've now re-rendered and looks a lot better.
Better,
yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You're looking at that first time and go, ooh.
It's like if you look at Seven's implant in the first trailer. Don't get me wrong, and I know the guys were trying to get it out in time for trailer season.
They have a deadline,
The trailer was getting it out for trailer season, and I can almost certainly guarantee, based on some of the CG, based on some of the prop work, based on some of the makeup, the prosthetics works with Seven's ocular implant, that was almost certainly shot specifically to be a trailer.
Yeah.
They had literally said, we are filming these scenes anyway.
Yeah.
But we are going to film them as a trailer.
Well, it's like...
Because you can see, with the ocular implant, it is literally just a lump of liquid latex that they painted grey. You can see with Brent's green, the CGI mask that he has to wear for the actual show, which
CGI mask?
Yeah, they've had to dot him.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay.
That's not a CGI mask, so that's...
No, but they've literally got pencil marks all over his face.
Okay.
Yeah, so motion track trackers. Yeah, motion
so track every mark. Scene he's shot in mocap, basically.
Yeah, because I did see a poster recently where, you know, they were saying that Brent Spiner agreed to do it, having seen the aging digital technology that they would be using for his character.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously the scene that you're talking about in the trailer wasn't first using trailer. That. It was just
it was
Brent
the first. It was probably the first pass.
Well, no, I'd say it was
wasn't the completed article. Yeah.
No, I think that was the kind of the it was the first pass, as you say, because it's literally just let's stretch out the wrinkles. Let's just use the burn, dodge, and smoothing tools and Photoshop type of thing.
It's,
so
it's like the first year intern was given a get that ready for training.
Yeah, yeah, get that out quick, quick, quick. What's the first? It looks fine. Actually, I didn't mind that because obviously actors have aged.
Yeah.
And that happens. And if you want to tell the story, but the actors available, and you use them. But they've put on weight, they've lost weight, they're different shape, size, or whatever. The one thing that you can change and fix that I disliked about Data's look in that particular shot was his contacts. And I don't know whether they were a CGI or a contact lens on Brent.
CGIs.
CGIs. I don't know, because his contacts through the show for 7 seasons were a certain type of shape and size.
Mm.
And then most of the movies, and then in Nemesis, they changed. Mm. And they were a little bit bigger and more yellow.
Mm.
And I didn't like them.
He's had
that one.
He's had some hardware upgrades over the last 20 years.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing. Is it actually Data, or is it Picard talking to himself in his head?
Or is it B4?
Or is it before? We've all these questions.
Well, I tell you what, let's get into that, right? Because the one thing about this show is obviously it's Picard. Picard is coming back. He's gonna have new friends along the way. So there's going to be brand new people coming in. There's new actors, which is very exciting for as a Star Trek fan. But you have those cameos. So let's talk specifically about Brent Spiner here. What do we think is happening with Brent Spiner in the show? Is it a memory? Is it a dream? Is it a holographic program? Is it B4? What do we think?
So I've kind of dived far too deep down this rabbit hole already. So one of my little lovely fan theories is it's almost a continuation of his. You remember this the finale, All Good Things.
Yes.
Right, where Admiral Picard, or Ambassador Picard, has retired to the vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear Geordi coming down the vineyard with, "Captain to the bridge, we've got an issue with the ODN line or some other damn thing." And I have a feeling that it's something along those lines. He's flashing back to, I would say it's probably going to be a mid-season episode. And I'm going to guess that it's somewhere around episode 3 or 4. Where he's remembering something, or something has happened to knock him unconscious, or something for the dream scene, or the yellow pages, or the pink pages, as it's called in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Brent, I suppose, acting like his conscience, or acting like his inner voice, to steer him onto the right path, if that makes any sense.
I would agree with that, and I would say it's more like maybe not an episode, but it is something Picard is remembering and thinking of when something hard's coming up, or he's thinking about the new adventure, and he'll think back to, well, what would my friends advise?
Mm-hmm.
Usually everyone else would go to the captain for their advice or something, or each other, but this is Picard-centric. So he'd go to, well, his old and best command crew. So it's Data and Riker and Troy and all them. So, yeah, I would go with that. I don't know if it would be just an episode. I think it might be something that plays throughout the series as you go. It's Picard thinking of moments where he would speak to Data about things, and where his Spock type logic.
I'm going to disagree in principle. But in actual fact, I think it's a Janeway Leonardo da Vinci moment where, you know, he has a holographic program and he consults with Data on the holodeck.
That's a nice one. I like that. I'd go with that too. Yeah.
The idea for me, that the possibility that Data has returned in some way, is quite exciting. But
it's just for me to cry at the end of a trailer,
exactly.
Jerry. That's all it is.
But when you with that very first trailer, and we'll talk just about the first trailer. I don't want to go into too much into spoiler territory. There is a part in that first trailer where a drawer opens and you see limbs and torso, and you're like, okay, well, what's that?
Is it
that
before? Then you see, is it lore?
Exactly. So what is it? So
did they pick up Data after he blew up in the scimitar?
I don't think so. A Thaleron explosion is going to vaporize everything.
Well, that was the thing. That was the thing where myself and Frank and Jerry were talking about the last time. There's scorch marks on certain parts of the body parts. Mm. So, you know, it could be something to speculate.
Yeah.
So which body is it? Because we have three Sung-type androids that
That we know of.
That we know of.
That we know of, know? Yeah.
So and there's also the spare of Sung Tam Bandroid that the positronic brain in failed, but it's there in Sung's original laboratory still.
Yeah, so, and yeah. Starfleet would have that in storage with lore.
Oh, don't, let me guess, Commander Maddox comes back as like Captain Maddox.
I have to argue the whole point all over again.
He's just a machine.
Yeah. Well, this we'll one see. Is, he doesn't have a functioning positronic brain.
Well, we'll see about that. So, obviously,
so we put the EMH inside a physical body. Yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
Technically, you might get more rights that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea, actually, yeah. I like that. So, obviously, we've got a couple of cameos. We have Brent Spiner coming in, but we've also got the likes of Roy Kirk.
Who's Roy Kirk?
Roy Kinnear? What's he doing in the show?
Roy Kirk is coming back. He's Jim's great-great-grandson.
Exactly. Riker and Troy. So what do we think about that part? You know, it seems from the trailer, you know, they've
I love Jonathan Frakes' face in that trailer.
Yes, absolutely brilliant.
You know, yeah, hello, number one. And just Johnny Frakes, just utter... It's like, is he taking the piss? Mm-hmm. It's just such a great wide-eyed... moment in Captain Kirk's kitchen. Very, you know,
yes,
quick,
very generations.
That,
yes.
Feels like that. It feels like that same set. It's not, but it feels like the same yeah. set. Very much that rustic, similar look.
It's the same house in suburban Missouri that happened yeah. to rent. It's one of the producers' houses.
Yeah.
It'll be cheaper
he's
that way. Let's
he's come. Making Katerian eggs or something, you know.
So what do we think about those who are coming back? Obviously, I think that's more of a cameo rather than recurring cameo.
I think it's just one episode.
Yeah,
I think it's just one episode.
It's from what I've heard, and without it's not meant to be spoilers, but it's one episode, but it's a complete episode. The entire episode is Picard visiting the Rikers.
Back on the ranch.
Yeah.
It may very well be that the trigger has gone off and he's considering what he's going to do.
And he needs the kick to get him out the door? Or?
Well, no, I think he more kind of goes to Riker for his... like. So the whole thing is obviously Riker...
Actually, no, that's... Sorry, just, I didn't mean to cut across you. Yeah. That's what we heard. He said that actually at Destination, mm-hmm. if you recall.
Yeah.
That that episode with Riker and Troy was actually an entire episode.
Yeah.
The entire episode is all about that particular...
meeting and those discussions.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling it's going to be very much a case of he turns around. So, again... Star Trek Extended Universe is very much like Star Wars Legends. A lot of it is kind of beta canon, if you will. But I think it's very much going to be a case of he goes to Captain Riker, who's retired from the Typhon. The Typhon was a whole other Star
Trek. That's an expanse.
That's a
Typhon expanse.
There was a Typhon.
The Typhon Pact, the Typhon Expanse, the USS Typhon. There's a whole lot of Typhons.
It's also in the Star Trek Adventures game we're playing. So
That's the hardened carrier, yeah. No, but like I say, he's going to another commander with almost as much experience as he has sitting in the big chair and kind of, I suppose, weighing the pros and cons. Mm. And I almost think that Deanna is there more to just say, hang on, the hell with logic. What do you feel is right here? Mm. And that's the kind of the catalyst that kicks him into action. And that's what kicks off the whole...
Well, they're not bound by Starfleet rules and regulations. The Prime Directive, does he adhere to it because he wants to? Because he's not part of Starfleet anymore. And neither are they.
No.
So, and we don't know what the situation is, who he's talking to with Data. And there's in the trailer, there's the argument with the Admiral.
Yes.
No, this is not your Starfleet anymore, Jean-Luc.
Go home.
So, you know, so yeah, go home. Like, fuck off. So he's obviously taking... umbrage at the way Starfleet is proceeding with this. So does he, as his character, adhere to the principles we all learned about in The Next Generation and the four movies? Or does he just decide, well, am I going to break some of those because I can now? Mm-hmm. And is that new, darker, kind of more modern storytelling that we're going to get from the writers?
I don't think so. I think it's that darker storytelling is going to come from what Starfleet is becoming, and that Picard is the one constant that he's resisting that.
Yeah,
he's staying true to
himself.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, reacting to what Starfleet is becoming.
But he'll have those moments of quandary.
Oh, yes, he will.
And that's we're going to have the discussions with Data of uncertain life topics and going to see Riker and Troy
that's
and bumping into other characters.
That's where I think the whole holographic thing comes in, because If Data was a hologram, he's basically Picard going and talking to him. Like, I need to make this decision.
But if it's Data as a hologram, it's very easy that it is Data.
Yes.
Because we have Data's memory engrams. Yes. They were in B4. Like, Data's entire experience was downloaded into B4. Mm. So as a positronic being, his physical body is gone, but the soul, if you want to call it that, of Data, Data's collective memories, what made Data Data after 10 years on the Enterprise and his years before that getting to Lieutenant Commander, mm-hmm. load that into a holographic or a holodeck and a holographic holodeck computer, you can have Data.
Yeah.
And he has a hologram, just like an EMH now, he has a holographic body in, mm. And he's stuck in that holodeck. But and you have to go visit him to see him.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, the other thing I'm looking at is, and again, I've gone super nerdy with this and read all the IDW tie-in comics. I've read the Captain Data, which is now non-existent anymore, by the way. They have said
they got rid of that, right.
That Captain Data didn't happen.
Okay.
So, for anyone who's a fan of the Captain Data comics, I'm sorry.
I'm going to jump in here. Enterprise F does appear in the comics.
It's actually not the F. So the Odyssey class starship, which, by the way, is a fan design,
yeah,
that has now been made beta canon until it technically appears on screen in some form of.
That's
memory.
What I'm asking. Do you think it's going to come into Picard? Mm. Will we see the Enterprise F, the Odyssey class that was now Yorktown class or something in Star Trek Online that was designed by a fan, which would cause rights problems for putting it on screen?
Not necessarily, because that fan signed away his rights to it.
Oh, did he? Became,
it was part of the competition terms and conditions, as far as I know. But with Cryptic's close relationship with CBS and Paramount and IDW.
Cryptic is the
developer
computer
of Star Trek Online.
They make Star Trek Online, yeah.
With Cryptic and Perfect Worlds, who are the publishers, they have a really, really close relationship with CBS. Like, for example, this last year, they released a whole Discovery-era storyline that was developing with the show as it was airing each week, which was beyond insane. I can't imagine the hours the devs put in.
Well,
I
haven't played Star Trek Online for a couple of years now.
They had all the voice actors appear, didn't they?
Had Paul Stamets turn up. They've had Dev Patel turn up. They've had Rekki Sharma turn up. They've had Jason Isaacs turn up. Yeah. Like, they've pulled in all the major, well, I suppose the B-list characters, if you will. Yeah, because
Jason Isaac isn't exactly B-list.
No, but he's B-list for Discovery because he's only in one season.
He's in one season.
Yeah.
He's the Defense Against the Dark Arts captain.
Yeah, exactly.
oh God, poor Saru's going to die this season. Spoilers!
but yeah,
don't tell Doug. Don't tell Doug.
Oh God. But the Star Trek Online and Perfect World and Cryptic have had such a close relationship with them. And with they have this weekly 10 forward stream they do every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific time, which is like stupid o'clock Irish time, which I unfortunately do watch every week. But they have kind of dropped very not-so-subtle piano-sized hints that there is going to be tie-in because, again, the Star Trek Online story kicks off with the Hoba supernova, which destroys Romulus. And this whole thing in the IDW comics is they know about the Hoba supernova and that it's going to destroy Romulus 10 years before it happens. For anyone else who's wondering what I'm on about, this is the thing that kicked off the Kelvin timeline.
Yeah. This is what this jellyfish was designed to try and stop, and Spock was too late.
Ambassador Spock was to go try and fix the supernova. It didn't happen. The Narada got thrown back in time. But that whole thing is the IDW comics is him aboard the new Odyssey, his new Odyssey-class starship as a fleet admiral, coordinating the evacuation of Romulan colonies in the blast radius. That's going to end up destroying Romulus. Mm. So,
is this out as a graphic novel collection yet, or is it just
online leaf. Comics?
Oh, it's just online comics.
Yeah, I don't know if they've released
it's paper leaf, isn't it?
I think it's paper leaf. Yeah, but it's a fantastic comic, by the way. Like, it's 4-episode run. They've only released
only four,
through three so far. So we still haven't got the final plot hook yet, which is
I'd imagine you're going to find one after the first episode of
or they're going to be really cheeky and release it on Thursday morning.
Yeah.
In America.
Yes, in America.
Because it won't get delivered here till Monday.
Comic subscription, baby. Read it online. So,
it'll drop online, but if you want to get it in print, you'll have to wait.
So, again, it's that whole tie-in and that whole thing that even the devs have said, we are going to face a challenge of rewriting some of our story. that they're now kind of saying, Hong Kong, we are working with Picard. We are working with this. So this is not just an Amazon Prime TV special that they're doing. This is
broad
expanding all the beta canon as well.
Yeah. So, I like that idea. I do like the idea as well that they would change the story on Star Trek Online to include Picard, because I've been playing it since day one. Lifetime subscriber, the whole lot, like £200 for the bloody lifetime subscription. My wife was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Star Trek. Leave me alone. Star Trek."
Listen, I get 500 Zen every month, and because I get that, it means I don't have to spend £30 on every new starship that comes out. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, and they still blight it.
I still have an ambassador class parked somewhere in the beta quadrant. I think
we've all got one at this point. I think we've all got one.
It was my main ship. I was just like, that's what it is.
I think I've junked so many of those ambassador classes, yeah. It's not even
funny. You look at it and go, right, well, we've been playing this same kind of storyline for, what's it, 10 years?
10 years this month.
There you go. And they're now going to say, right, we're going to redo this and give you something different. That's exciting.
The Picard timeline.
Yeah. Now, in fairness to them, they have been kind of slowly over the last 3 years or so been kind of pulling the older missions and rewriting them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, but when it first released, you could only play as a level 25 Klingon.
Yeah, you started at level 20.
Yeah, it was only when your main got to level 20 you could even create a Klingon.
Yeah.
And, that's all changed.
Actually, I got a free Klingon.
Yeah.
Starting at level 20. But I completed a bunch of other things on my main first, and then I went to my Klingon, but they changed the rules. So I got to start my Klingon. I started the mission. But when I completed the nursery area mission, the final door to the outside world or the rest of the universe didn't appear. So that Klingon is still stuck in the Hall of Heroes or wherever he was. And the final door.
It's a good place to be stuck.
Yeah, he couldn't do anything. So there you have it. I have a level 20 Klingon that I've never used because I literally did one quest with him and the door, it was almost like the holodeck door, just wouldn't appear. So where is it? I got onto the devs and everything and they just passed by that point so far. They couldn't even portal my character. He was stuck in this nursery zone.
He's stuck in a branch of code that was abandoned
six
years ago. It doesn't exist anymore.
Well, no, this was about 5 years ago when I was doing this, but I did start that.
But I have to say now the Yorktown or
Odyssey class.
So the whole thing with the Yorktown and the other subclasses, they're Block 2 after the Iconian War. So it's still the Odyssey class in Picard's time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it is the Odyssey class.
His ship, though, The Odyssey class that he has, what's the title of that ship?
What is it called?
Oh, it's not the Enterprise.
No, it's not the Enterprise. Begins with A, but it's not Avenger. It's one of the really... It's a pleasant name, shall we say. Because, Star Trek.
Yeah, well, apart from Defiant, other than...
The Avalon, is it?
It's the Avalon or the... It's along those lines.
But we had instant access to some sort of international global network.
If only we had some central database that we could access.
In terms of that, though, there's been nothing to say that the Enterprise E has been destroyed, that he's in the comic.
Yeah.
He's a fleet admiral.
Yeah.
He has a new ship.
It's his new flagship.
New flagship, new crew.
Yep.
There's nothing to say that the Enterprise E has been destroyed.
No. And that's the thing. I mean, even in Star Trek Online's timeline, the Sovereign lasted well into the 2410s. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Sovereign class is still going strong. I mean, look at the Excelsior. The Excelsior was a hull that was built.
Look at the Excelsior and the Miranda class.
They lasted 120 years.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, obviously, fictional starships, but still. They lasted 120 years as space frames, which, why couldn't the Sovereign?
It's only
40 years. I mean, it's not.
Well, I think the Galaxy class as well, that type of ship would certainly last. That's probably one of the most versatile ships in
the USS. USS Verity.
There you go.
Verity.
NCC 97000.
Which would indicate that it's actually the first of the class.
Yeah.
Aside from
the Verity class. But the Verity. The Verity is an Odyssey class, so it's not the first one.
No, but the Odyssey would be NX, whatever.
Yeah.
It's probably the first one that passed its space trials.
Yeah. And this is a much bigger ship that he's used to. A much more advanced ship. Because Picard generally gets advanced starships.
It's one of my favorite lines from First Contact. We've been out in space for nearly a year now, and we're the most advanced ship in the fleet. And you're like, really? Because, there's 19 new classes of Starship literally rolling out of space dock right now.
you're still a few decks short of a Galaxy class Explorer, you know.
Yeah. You can't beat a Galaxy class. There's no beating a Galaxy. I don't care what you put in front of me.
It looked fabulous on the screen that time. Yeah.
Andrew Probert, you know, designed some of the best things in the 80s. The Galaxy class Enterprise D, Back to the Future, he put those designs on the DeLorean. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah.
There is something I wanted to kind of bring up here because it's something that Star Trek Online actually just released. Speaking of the original Enterprise, the Ralph McQuarrie, and the whole debate over Discovery when it was first released over the Ralph McQuarrie design.
Oh, the Adams McQuarrie design.
Yeah. So Star Trek Online just released.
I hated that. Talking about first trailers. While Robbie, so people who were listening because you can't watch, Robbie's just checking something on his phone. First trailers, the Picard trailer, I mean, the end of it hit me. I mean, I got the feels, you know. The first trailer for Discovery, I hated it.
Are we talking about the very, very first trailer, when season one?
The before season one, this is the announcement trailer where it's the new Galaxy, Discovery ship.
That's the
coming out of the space dock, the asteroid space dock. But it was the original design from the drawing, the McQuarrie Adams design, with the warp nacelles hadn't been fixed by John Eaves and stuff. I hated it.
Well, that's this what I'm pulling up now is so in the Star Trek timeline, they've just released the Star Trek Online timeline. I should say they've just released this idea of the Khitomer Alliance, the new Romulans, the Klingon Empire and the Federation after the Iconian War are all working together, and they said, you know what, why aren't we building ships together? Mm-hmm. Like, why are we building warships? They're building warbirds and we're building, you know, science ships that can't shoot anything. Because the Star Trek Online timeline is very much a galaxy at war. So the Allied Fleet Service, the AFS as it's now called, has developed the Khitomer class cruiser, which, honest to God, looks like Ralph McQuarrie's original Enterprise brought into the 24th century.
Well, I'm just looking at this image because just to do a visual description. So we have the arse end of a Klingon warbird because it's dropped down warp nacelles on a short warp strut. You know, a secondary hull with what looks to be like spiky bits at the back, a saucer section sticking out the front. However, if you flip the image upside down, it just generally looks like a standard Federation starship.
But it's got Klingon writing on the hull.
Yeah, it's got Klingon, so it's got other bits and pieces. I mean, I can see what they're going for, but it's
It literally looks as though somebody took the saucer section off the original Enterprise, the original Constitution class, stuck a balloon in there and inflated it a bit, and then stuck it on the hull of a D7.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, okay, right. So you've got, it looks a little bit Starfleet, a little bit Klingon. Where's the Romulan aspect?
I think that's the spiky bits.
It's the cool spiky bits up the top there.
Okay.
What's the name of that ship? Do we have a class yet? Just so people can search for it.
The AFS Khitomer.
AFS Khitomer. Do an image search for that on Star Trek Online and you'll see what we're talking about.
Or just go to their website, arcgames.com, Star Trek Online.
And it's the Khitomer class.
It's the new Khitomer class because it's harking back to the Khitomer Accords. Okay. Because the new Romulan Republic came into the Khitomer Accords after the Iconian War, so...
And will we see it in Picard?
I strongly doubt it because it's released in 2411.
So here's another question. So we've got a ragtag fleet, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not Starfleet. We've got Hugh. From episode to watch is Iborg, if you haven't seen that before, for any of the newbies who came in with the Kelvin universe and are trying to catch up and stuff
and
for new series.
Datalore?
We could list off a whole bunch of episodes that are important. Mm-hmm.
Descent.
No, yes. It starts in Iborg, and then we have the season 6-7 two-parter, which is Descent Part 1 and 2 with Lore and the Rogue Borg. Mm-hmm.
Because Seven was the first one disconnected from the collective, we swear.
Yes, she was in the Delta Quadrant. So what ship are they going to be on? What sort of ship? Because we've got a Japanese Vulcan, you know, with his katana. Sorry, special sword. Or he's an elf. I don't know.
He's a Romulan.
He's an elf from Lord of the Rings. I mean, a Romulan with an elven sword.
Listen,
anyway,
if Hikaru Sulu can jump onto the Narada's mining laser with a katana, a Romulan can have a katana.
Yeah, that's
folding.
Yeah,
fold, I want that folding katana. That,
yeah. Okay, well let's get into more cameos. Okay, it seems from if you've just watched the very first trailer, you've not watched any of the subsequent ones. It seems very Borg central.
Oh,
very,
yeah.
Very Borg central. You've got obviously Picard, who was a Borg. He was Locutus. You've got Seven of Nine,
mm-hmm.
Who was a Borg.
Who was a Borg. Annika, who Frank says is going to be your name. And then you've got Hugh.
Mm.
Now, how are we fitting this all together, lads? How do we feel about this?
So
I don't think you could have a Picard series without it being Borg central.
No, well, you could, but it would kind of take away his core demon, I suppose, because...
Yes.
Ever since season four, when he was, it's always been that thing that's haunted him in the back of his mind.
Especially in First Contact. They really played it up in First Contact, which is great.
And it kind of was a nice, and I will say this, like, having been there, having suffered it myself, it was a nice visualization of PTSD without screaming on screen, PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was very much for me went, yeah, I've been there.
Mm. The whole thing about the PSD, I think, comes from the episode just after Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah, family.
Yes.
Family, yeah.
When he visits his brother and
Robert.
They have that fight.
Yeah.
And they're in the mud and they're all dirty and then he just, it finally, he's like, he has to release it and he just breaks down.
Cries.
Yeah,
and
he just breaks down.
That for me was one of, if not one of my top 10, it was one of my top 10 episodes, if not right at the top of the list for me. But again, it was a nice... visualization of it in First Contact when it was very much a case of, oh, you still get these odd flashes because you do. It's, you know, every so often something will trigger it and you just go.
I disliked what they did with the link in Generations. They needed something for Picard to have an emotional moment in Generations.
Oh, so kill his family.
So we'll just kill Robert and what was his nephew's name?
Rene.
Yeah. And so kill his brother Robert and Rene. They died in the fire.
And hashtag unnamed wife.
And unnamed wife, yeah. you know, and it was there so we could have this emotional moment with and have some thoughts.
And ponder mortality.
Yeah, it was a story point that was needed. Even when I saw it, I was like, it didn't grab me. It wasn't as an emotional thing as maybe the writers were going for what they needed for that moment of for the character for that particular movie.
I think some would say
that movie script was rushed though.
I think it would have been more impactful, and forgive me Gates McFadden and Gates McFadden fans, I think it would have been more impactful if they'd killed Beverly.
Can't kill Beverly. They did that before by writing her out and people weren't happy.
She just became the chief of Starfleet Medical. That's fine. That was just, you know, that was reassignment for a year. But no, I think that would have been a more... Because again, you have Star Trek fans who are massive fans of Gates McFadden.
Yeah.
Like, she is one of the leading women of Trek royalty.
Mm-hmm.
Even to this day.
And I have to say, the one and only time I met her at Dublin Comic Con... she was lovely, and she has that. She gives you your moment, and I remember her sitting back and, oh, what do you do? And of course, I work in the film industry, so she was a little bit more interested. And I don't know if that was more interested than anyone else, but she talked a little bit about her start and stuff like that, and so a little interaction. So, and that's the perfect thing to do. She was great, love that.
Yeah, I don't see how that would have worked.
I mean, I think
you know, particularly as it was the first movie, they weren't going to kill off one of the main.
No. I'm not saying it would have worked.
You know,
in a Hollywood
I think that the manner in which they presented the death of Picard's family did work. In that he got this notification, he had to read the. I'm trying to remember now, but he read the text message
to see what happened,
and you see the way his face changes and the emotion that starts to show. And that's all they need. Sometimes that's how you find out that something like this is happening when you're out on mission, like, you know.
Well, I think my point is, did Picard need to be in that mood for that movie? Because the movie's about Sauron and stuff like that. So maybe it's just I saw it once that way. It locked into my brain that way. And, you know, the rest, every time I've subsequently watched it, you know, you're trying to make it a Picard story. But it's really about fighting against Sauron. Well, so
I know where you're going with that, okay? And I get that, but the whole thing was, think about who Picard was. He was this guy who he wouldn't go against a prime directive. He was about the rules and the whole lot. But it had to tie in Picard and the Nexus, and he's just lost his family. He's just lost the only family he's ever had.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who's now being tempted.
Yeah.
You know, any other time in his life, no.
I've got a great Picard.
I'm not going to be tempted.
He hallucinates. Sometimes it takes an event like that for a character to change.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They needed it for the character.
Which, for me, to go off track for a minute, is why one of the best Bond movies is License to Kill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's
a similar idea.
The killing of the wife and
the killing
car.
Of Felix's wife.
Yeah.
And Timothy Dalton, absolutely brilliant. But, you know, a much darker Bond. Why? Because he goes on a murder rampage mm-hmm. out of grief and anger. It was similar idea. And it was the same thing with Picard in Generations. Mm. This highly emotional event takes place, and it changes the way he deals with views what's happening.
But how much more he loved Rene, obviously his nephew. Mm-hmm. Didn't see Robert in the Nexus, did we? I didn't care about Robert. Robert wasn't at Christmas dinner. He wasn't sitting at the Christmas tree or with a brandy.
It's because we couldn't afford the actor.
He didn't even get the usual cameo of a painting in a corridor or something like that.
His photo on the mantelpiece.
Of a big family photo of them all together.
Yeah.
Okay, well...
No, but I was going to say, because if you watch... And again, it's one of those weird things. If you actually watch the whole of the Next Generation movie series... Mm-hmm. It's weird because it's actually an overarching story over three or four movies about mortality. Because in the first one, it's Picard contemplating his own mortality and facing the fact that he is mortal. He's on this road. He's on his life path. Then they get an opportunity to relive their youth in Insurrection.
Yeah.
Then they get the loss of a friend in Nemesis. Mm. Like, it's this weird actual... It's almost as though...
Are you trying to say that Star Trek is a very morbid show?
No, forgive me for saying this. I'm going to say the Paramount actually had a plan for those movies.
Well, let's talk about the two cameo Borg that we're getting. We're getting Hugh, we're getting Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
Obviously in that very
gun-toting.
Yes, very gun-toting. I will say this. You know, generally when over a 20, 25-year period, we first saw Seven of Nine about 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. Or 21 years ago.
Season 4, she came in.
It's like she's de-aged. She looks even better. She looks amazing. I saw her on the red carpet last week at the premiere. And you're just like, wow, has she aged a lot? She looks absolutely fantastic. Oh, no.
With her son in his mid-20s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Teens and 20s.
Jerry Ryan's drinking from the same fountain of youth that Patrick Stewart is.
Well, in fairness, you look at a picture from him from 30 years ago and look at a picture now, and the only difference is a little bit, the extra skin underneath the chin. That's about it.
His eyelids are a little bit heavier. Yeah. That's it. His eyes are smaller.
A couple of extra freckles, you know. It's
But obviously, you know, we're definitely going with a very Borg-centric series here. We've got Picard and
storyline for season story. One.
Exactly, yeah.
Season one's arc.
You've got Hugh, you've got Seven. Then you've got that lovely, very, very quick shot of a big blue Borg cube.
Oh, the cube with the force fields holding it together.
Yeah, so where are we going with this? What do we think? Are we happy
Starfleet
about this?
Research.
Are we not happy about it?
Oh, I'm ecstatic because I've no idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
speculation is all we're doing here.
I can't even speculate on that, what they're going to use the Borg for in this, unless there's a new attempt to assimilate Starfleet or whatever. But, you know, that particular scene and the scene with the classic series Romulan Warlord getting involved.
That's very interesting as
well.
There's
so much going on in that trailer that, I don't know, it's really hard to speculate.
Is that a Borg cube with shields on, or is that a research location that Starfleet have pieced back together a Borg cube?
Well, for me, I look at it and go, well, number one, it's the wrong color.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's an active, we'll say, Borg cube or a Borg cube that's in a fight or anything like that. I'm looking at that going, that's a captured cube or somebody has, you're saying, like a research type of thing. And I like the idea of that, that they're actually properly studying the Borg.
A non-collective group of Borg on that cube.
Well, there you go.
You've got Hugh and those guys from the same.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly where they go with that.
Remind me, did Croesus live?
No,
Croesus was killed. Croesus was killed. Yeah. Croesus was the other bad Borg.
Again, I'm going back to Star Trek Online here. I'm going to say Borg cube damaged by the Hobus supernova, cube captured by the Romulans, the remnants of the Romulan Imperial Navy. The Romulans, the actual Imperial Navy, the Tal Shiar, is just the intelligence service. Mm. But yeah,
who knows what they have?
Yeah, Borg cube damaged by the supernova, found in a star system by the Romulans. The Seven of Nine's freedom fighter or mercenary group figures it out, goes to Picard and says, "Help!" And Picard says, "Yep, let's do it."
Mm. And of course, there's also the fact that in the 2009 Star Trek movie, Spock is pursued by Nero on the Narada,
Narada,
which was a Romulan vessel with Borg technology.
Yeah, it was enhanced by Borg. That's why it kept growing.
Yeah,
that was the thing, that you only get that in the comics.
It's very well, you know, if you hadn't seen the comics, and as soon as you say that connection, you're like, God, all you have to do is look at it.
Do you not?
And you think, God, it's very Borg-like.
Well, again,
all the green Star
Trek Online,
the Narada, the Tal Shiar adapted destroyer.
Yeah,
which is the Narada scaled down.
Yeah.
So,
but the Narada was a mining vessel initially.
Mm. Yeah.
But when Nero went off on his rampage, they got his hands on Borg technology and augmented his ship. But that's why it starts one size at the start of the 2009.
It's absolutely planet size
by the end of
colossal,
it.
Colossal. And it can take out the cut
25
section.
25 Klingon ships.
47 Klingon ships.
47.
Yeah, 47. Because magic number in Star Trek is 47.
Yep.
Code 47. And, channel 47.
And 12 Federation starships.
Exactly.
Well, 12 Federation starships in, like, 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Over Vulcan. In a pear tree.
Yeah.
I know. So it's certainly going to be interesting to see how it's all going to fit in. But we've got a good few cameos in the show.
Yeah.
What other cameos would we like to see, though? You know, there's certain ones. As soon as I seen 7, I was like, I want a bit of Janeway.
I want
Kate Mulgrew in that. Because I loved Voyager. I loved Captain Janeway, but I also loved...
We have rumours of Bob Picardo for season 2.
Well, I like that.
Again,
from himself,
campaigning, hashtag bring back the Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, he's been very vocal on Twitter about being willing to reprise the role of Joe.
Yeah.
Joe. Well, I genuinely don't think any Star Trek actor is going to go, actually, no, I don't want to be part of that.
Ethan Phillips will if they try to put him in prosthetics again.
Well, he's a bit far away.
He's always in prosthetics,
he's a bit
though.
Far away.
Yeah.
But you look at, like, I'd love Kate Mulgrew, Captain Janeway, because not only from her work in Star Trek, but as Red in Orange is the New Black, I thought she was absolutely amazing in that.
She's fantastic.
So to have her back, we had that little quick cameo in Nemesis of her as Admiral Janeway, and I did like that. I was like, I just wanted more. I want a little bit more.
But since Jerry Ryan, the actress, has gotten a cameo, will Kate fight to go, well, I want one as well? Or she go, I don't want to go anywhere near that show.
Look, let's not bring up that. I will say
they're
this.
They're all friends now. Did you not hear?
Yeah, sure. And so are the USA and Russia.
Yeah, hey. Well, they are because
well, they
Trump,
are.
Trump
yeah.
loves them.
Yeah.
Okay, so were the USA and Russia during the 80s.
Yeah.
No, I the one I would love to see come back, and again, it's one for me that I would love to see them bring back, is Miral Torres. Miral Paris.
Oh.
Oh, the daughter.
From the last episode.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From Endgame.
Endgame.
Endgame, yeah.
Because, again, she's going to be, you know, she's going to be 18, 19 at this stage. Mm-hmm. She's going to be, if not a fourth-year cadet, just graduated from the academy, an ensign, sent out to kind of, you know, touch base with her old commander's friend.
Well, we've got we're talking about
and touch base with her old friend, the one who her aunt, 7 of 9, who was there the whole time she was growing up. So again,
we've got Next Generation cameos, and obviously we've got Next Generation and Voyager mixed in at the moment. Will we get any DS9?
The motherfucking Cisco.
I don't think you'll get Avery Brock.
No, you're not, no, you won't get him.
No, he's in the wormhole with the prophets.
Yeah,
Bashir maybe.
Could we get Bashir Section 31? Bashir comes in with Section 31. That could be cool.
No, I actually like the idea of him actually being part of Section 31. And let's say
there's a series of books with Bashir in Section 31, Disavowed and stuff like that.
But he's also on the Aventine with his wife Ezri.
Yes. You know, so
I wouldn't mind seeing Ezri.
Well, she's captain of the Aventine.
She is, yeah. So,
yeah.
Or Jet Z.
In the extended universe. So
unfortunately, we can't.
Yeah, so again, like, if you're bringing back Julian, you're going to have to bring back Ezri.
Not necessarily. Yeah. People can be reassigned or called back. Yeah. You know, it depends on contracts and actors. But
yeah,
would you want to, like, because that's a whole, bringing a whole starship and that whole storyline and stuff like that.
Send the Aventine with quantum slipstream drive, the fastest, most advanced ship in the fleet, to hunt down the renegades.
Yeah, but then you're adding a ship in a show that's called Picard, and you're going into a different direction. It's
oh, I know.
You
know,
it's dreaming. You know,
it's dreaming. Yeah.
It's nice dreaming.
You're probably looking at too many cameos then at that point, and you're missing the point of the actual show itself. It's just you're saying, let's just have a cameo for the sake of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
From
you
what,
know what I mean? So,
from what Pat Stew said at the panel in London, it's going to very much be about exploring the nature of humanity, not the wonder of humanity. So it's going to be kind of, I suppose,
it's not going to be the best of us.
It's going to be very cerebral. I mean, you're talking, like, there are going to be action scenes because you can't.
Well, we've
make
seen
a TV
them. We've seen
show.
The guys falling off the staircase and the
I
steps.
I mean,
and the...
you can't make a TV show these days without like 5 minutes of pew pew and a bang in the corner. I mean, that.
What type of bang are we talking about?
PG-13. So
hey.
Well, that's what myself and Frank had that conversation last night. We sat down and we watched Endgame last night. And it was the opening scene with Hawkeye and his family that the producers, correct me if I'm wrong, but the producers didn't want that scene in. And Joss had to fight for the speaking over the logs with Captain America and Iron Man, you know, chopping logs scene, that kind of downbeat of having a discussion. And then going into the action, whereas the producers are really going, well, you can't open a movie like that. It's not very exciting. You can't just walk in and start talking.
You can't have emotions.
You can't have emotions. It's an action movie, right? It's all about people hitting each other with Thor's hammer. And but you know, a good director knows to tell the story. You can't have the action make a powerful point without the emotion behind it and the reasons for doing it.
Yeah. I would say we're going to see a lot of that action. Any action that we do see is going to be very much underscored by the motivation, the reasoning, the why are we out here.
Which is the discussion with...
why am I thinking Galaxy Quest now? What is its motivation?
What is my motivation?
Do you need to make some sort of a rudimentary lathe to solve this problem?
Some of the best Star Trek out there, actually.
Yeah. That'll be the discussion. Yeah. So, and that's why he'll go and see Riker and Troi. It's why he's having his moments, having
with
discussions
Data.
With Data. Mm. And all the younger actors are all there to be calling, red alert, shields up, fire those torpedoes, fire everything! You know, that's...
And Picard's like, yeah, you take care of that.
You know, Grandad will sit in the corner kind of going,
drop my pills! Where are my pills?
I've realigned the plasma flow to the starboard conduits.
Beverly, what do I do? My aromatic syndrome is kicking up again. It's acting up again. What? Which tablet do I? What's the dosage? What's happening? Oh, there's a Borg cube on the main view screen. Hang on a second.
That's fine. They're dealing with it. It's fine. Help me with this.
Who? What's the Wi-Fi password?
P-I-C. No, that's not working. No, that's not working.
E-N-T-E-N. No, that's not working.
1-7. What was the other numbers?
Is there any bloody A, B, C, or D?
Yeah. Is there any geriatric track? That'll be the Seth MacFarlane one that he's going to make.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. No, I have a very strong feeling.
Or Robot Chicken.
Yeah. Oh, yes, Robot Chicken, absolutely.
Night Crew!
Well, actually, just to turn your question over on its head, Jerry, what cameos would you not like to see?
Oh, now that's a... Ooh.
And if any of the actors hear what you're going to say, they'll never sign an autograph or take a photo with you at a DST in the future.
Christ.
Bill Shatner.
Bill Shatner, yeah.
Oh, he will fight so hard to get into this show.
Oh, I know.
He'll write a whole new series of Picard Kirk books.
You know? Well, I'll tell you what, let me think about that question. You give me an answer. Who would you not like to see in it?
Who would I not like to see in it?
I've got one.
Okay, go ahead.
Wesley.
Wesley?
No, I wouldn't want to see him.
Really?
No.
We had that whole conversation about the reason I watched Star Trek because of Wesley.
Yeah, no, I get that. I like Will Wheaton, but I was like, where does he fit in?
Then don't watch The Ready Room because he's the host.
I like Will Wheaton, but I just don't think he would fit into Star Trek.
Well, again, Wesley, I don't think Wesley's going to be possible, really, because his whole story arc ended at the midpoint of season 7 when he took off with the
Traveler. No, Wesley was in...
He was in Nemesis.
No, he's in Nemesis. He's Lieutenant in Nemesis.
Oh, he
came back from
back,
with the Traveler. Yeah, no, he went back to Starfleet, and it's canon now that he's in Nemesis as Lieutenant, and he's on the Titan.
Was that in the theatrical cut, or was that...
That was the director's cut.
It's in the director's cut?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, it's on the disc, the Blu-ray, DVD I have at home.
He wasn't in the theatrical cut.
But it's on the DVDs, so...
Yes.
So he is canon.
He's canon, he's lieutenant,
well, I suppose there's a possibility we could see. What do you think, Frank? Who would you not like to see?
Tom Paris.
Bob McNeil, really?
Or Nick Lucerno.
No. Or Garrett Wang's character... Kim.
Lieutenant Kim.
Captain Kim.
Well, I'm just coming from the fact that now from my...
Poor Gareth.
And Voyager was my least favourite of all the shows. But those two characters just...
Gareth needs a job, man. Gareth Wang needs a job.
Gareth, he really does.
Gareth Wang needs a job, man. He's at every convention.
He volunteers or someone.
He does. He's the MC at Dragon Con sometimes now. Give Gareth Wang... Hashtag give Gareth Wang a job.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, true at all, like, Tom Paris is one of the most annoying characters for me, so that would be my choice for a cameo that I don't want to see.
Right, well, Robbie, what do you think? Who would you not like to see?
All right, this is going to be a very controversial one, but there is a logic behind it.
Okay.
The one person I would not like to see in there is Garrick.
Oh, you're fired.
No, for one simple reason.
He's plain and simple.
He is perfect. He is plain, simple Garrick. And he is a mystery that was left as an enigma, and I do not want that ruined.
Oh, but Andrew Robinson's voice.
Bring him back. Man. Bring Andrew Robinson back.
But keep
by
him
all
as
means.
Garrick.
No, change him. He's recast as some other character.
Oh, a different character. Okay.
Leave Garrick.
Stick him in a rubber head.
Yeah,
stick him in a rubber head somewhere. You know, let him roll off his sultry tones as Andrew
Andy
Robinson.
Andy Robinson opening the documentary,
What We Left Behind,
in the Garrick voice. And he comes out of the dark.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter he's not wearing his prosthetics.
It's Garrick.
You know, it's just Garrick.
He has that smile.
He wrote to explore the character of Garrick. I can't remember if we mentioned this in the last podcast. He wrote a book with a ghostwriter to explore the character of Garrick. And he does conventions in the States where he reads that book. There's a very old and dodgily recorded, I don't know, it was on a Hi8 camera or some sort of phone or something from back then. The sound quality isn't great, but if you can go through the hiss and listen to him, it's him reading Garrick, and it's Garrick talking about what he thinks of things that are happening and how things, and it's fantastic. And I would love for it if Simon and Schuster would just get him to record that book.
Put it on Audible.
I don't know what the rights are, if he can do it himself or he's only allowed to do it as a live stage performance. There's a suggestion for Carl Walsh and the guys at DCC. Get Andy Robinson over and let's hear him do a reading. I would love that, because it's very difficult to listen to that one and only video on YouTube.
I have seen that. It's very annoying. You know, you really want to listen to it and have good quality. You know, it's not good enough.
But if you can stick through the hiss of that particular video, go Andy Robinson and the Garrick reading the Garrick book live at a convention in the States a number of years ago. It is now, but just listening to him speak as Garrick in a book that he wrote to explore the character of Garrick, it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I would love to see Andy Robinson back, but I would not like to see Garrick, because Garrick was left just at that perfect midpoint where you were just getting to know him, but then they ended it.
I don't think we ever really knew Garrick.
No.
We didn't, and that's the best part about
exactly.
him.
Exactly, and that's why I don't
want
kept,
it back. Because it was kept. Yeah, let's just go to Star Wars for a second. The whole thing, the people's minds are blown because of this baby Yoda character. It's not Yoda. He's known as the child or the asset in the show.
Yeah, Disney, no Disney employee, you can call him Baby Yoda.
Yeah, well, Jon Favreau hates the fact that he's called Baby Yoda. But it's sort of like,
what do you think? What else did he think he was going to be called when he don't have a name?
I think he was kind of trying to hope to slip the species name in there somewhere and just be like...
But it goes along the lines of, well, we didn't really know much about Yoda.
No.
And the fact we don't even know what his race is called. So
hang on, there's children?
Yes, exactly. There you go.
Only like, seen two others.
Yeah. So
and both were Jedi.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And now this Baby Yoda has
Force powers.
Mm. Force powers, you know, so...
So is the whole species force sensitive?
We don't know.
And it's 50-year-old child.
Yeah, but there you go.
Toddler.
Toddler,
With Garrick, we didn't really know that much. We knew he was part of the Obsidian Order.
Yes.
We knew he used to be a spy, and he did things that no normal, honest person would do, but we didn't really know much about him.
Well, we knew that everything he did was for the state and for the good of Cardassia.
Yeah. But that's if that meant killing the head of the state for the good of Cardassia, then it's
kill
him.
Like absolutely, he committed. Garrick's character committed atrocities.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
we still
loved him.
Yeah, we still we're called Garrick. Garrick and Bashir, and there's some
Garrick,
wonderful.
Dukat. Well, huh? just
Garrick and Dukat.
Oh yeah, Andy Garrick Robinson and Dukat, Mark Lamo on screen together was just cinematic gold.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic together. Yeah, like you even look at. Like you're talking about the atrocities that he did. Look at how he helped Sisko bring the Romulans into the
world. Yeah, he did he pulled that.
He did
trigger
what
that
he knew
Sisko
what Sisko wouldn't do.
Yeah,
he was like, you're not going to do this, so I'm going to do it for you. And you can give me a few digs afterwards, but let's be honest, we're going to get.
I think we mentioned that as one of the best episodes of DS9 in the last podcast.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's cameos, and the lead up. Episodes. So I said to Frank yesterday or the other day, because I watched it. I only watched it recently as part of my own run-up. Season one, The Battle. We've had Best of Both Worlds, obviously. And you have Iborg for Hugh and introductions. We have Family. What else are we missing in there? You know, specifically Picard.
To give a bit
that
of throw,
you have to watch.
Well, to give a bit of throw to the Borg.
Because Captain's Holiday, I don't think you'd really need to watch.
Well, I mean, why not? It's a fun episode.
It's fun, but I don't know if it's going to be
the Captain Picard day when he gets trapped in the lift with the three kids. That's actually that's a great little episode because it just shows he starts off completely taken aback. Oh, God, I have to care for three adolescents. What the? And by the end of it, he's just, he just has complete faith in them. He loves them. You know, it's a lovely little kind of, he's not a crotchety old man.
What was the name of that episode again?
It escapes my mind.
It escapes my mind completely.
I don't know
Raven for the Borg side of things.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's recommended by the studio recommends Raven because it's Seven's backstory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Endgame, obviously.
Yes.
Because, you get to learn about the Hive and...
Well, they're Voyager. Sorry, I was just talking about Picard episodes.
Yeah, I was going to say, pretty much if you want the Borg, you're going to have to dip into season 4, 5, and 6 of Voyager, really. I mean...
A little bit of Seven as well.
You have Scorpion and all that, but... I felt that Voyager, they latched onto the Borg very much like a lot of shows latched onto the Klingons, and then a lot of people just got bored of them.
Oh, they were the big bad, and then by the end of the episode, it was like, one transphasic torpedo, cube gone.
Yeah, it's like this intrepid class scout vessel,
long range explorer.
Yeah, well, it's a long range explorer, but come on, it's 15 decks.
Yeah,
is taking on multiple cubes and tactical cubes, whereas the Enterprise D meets one. And has to run away screaming, so
not to mention the 50-odd starships that were lost at
Wolf 359, the Battle of First Contact, and all the new starships that had to be invented for the whole thing, and there's Voyager eventually.
The wonders of plot armor.
Yeah,
absolute wonders of plot armor.
Or plot weakness.
So how are we going to do it? We'll just invent new tech. Grant. Yeah.
Janeway came back from 20 years in the future.
Yes. Okay. There you go. So obviously, are we looking forward to Friday?
Yeah.
Are we looking forward to Friday?
Oh, yeah.
I know Frank is. Frank is like 1,000,000%. We're ready to go.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. The Cucullin is actually holding Picard Day.
We have Captain Picard Day on Saturday.
We're meeting up in the Teachers Club and we're going to watch a few Picard episodes and have a Picard quiz and then watch the new episode and talk about it, so absolutely.
Now, can anyone come to
Teachers Club?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Okay, right. So give us all the details. It's this Saturday.
This Saturday, 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, Teachers Club, Parnell Square.
36 Parnell Square.
36 Parnell Square, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who doesn't know where Parnell Square is, opposite the Rotunda Hospital.
Pretty much.
Just follow the screaming women.
If you don't have Google Maps on your phone at this stage,
Yeah.
Then you're a dinosaur. Yeah. If you don't.
Any of our older Trek fans.
But the buzz is
the Dublin 80s out to Z, you'll find there. Yeah.
The buzz has been fantastic for Picard.
Like, I think so.
You know, watching the videos of the premiere in the UK and, you know.
So this is
excitement.
We're going back to where we started 20 years ago. I mean, the first time we did work, we did do stuff beforehand, myself and Frank together, but I think the first kind of Star Trek video day we did was August 1999. It was the end of Deep Space Nine, you know, and here we are 21 years later. We haven't had watch days because, you know, you can see it at home on Friday, but the nostalgia of being able to, you know, we'll have the place, the room set up theater style. You know, we'll have a projector screen and a decent enough sound system. Only stereo, I'm sorry, but we'll have stereo.
No 5.1 Dolby.
No, it won't be 5.1. You'll have to do that in your own home theater. But it's that old thing of, and the younger people, because, you know, it's 21 years ago since we started that. Mm. And that's what we used to do. It's where, how, in the 90s, that's what we used to do. So, you know, there's people in their early 20s, late teens and early 20s, and if they came along, this would be alien to them.
Mm. John, I hate to say it, I'm in my mid-30s,
mm-hmm.
and I've never done a watch party.
You've never done a watch party. Look at that. You know,
wow. Yeah.
It was the way. Watch party nowadays, because that seems to me now, you know, people sitting in their own homes watching it and talking about it online is my understanding what a watch party is these days.
Well, yeah, like that's
we're talking about each other. We're like, you're going to watch the damn show. You're not going to watch it and talk over it in an American audience.
Like, we're talking about a social gathering
of a watch party is two monitors on my desktop at home. One has got the show on, the other's got Discord on, and you're talking to your mates, typing to them while you're watching.
Oh, no. We're not
that's
doing
not
that.
Yeah, that's
if you're,
you're
going to be on your phone, no, the, you know, get down the back or something like that. Because I don't, I use the QC for a living, quality control video. So, like, a bad pixel, I'm going to see it in the corner of my eye. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nobody's pulling their phone out when I'm sitting there watching that. You know, I'm busy at I'm at something else on Friday. I won't get a chance to see it on Friday.
So this is going to be your first show.
So it could very easily be the first time I see this episode is.
And he's letting me run the tech desk.
No, he's here.
if I make it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're going on Saturday, please do not piss John off because he will kill you.
Yeah, no phones out in front of me.
You can have the phones out during all the episodes of TNG and all the other pre-run stuff. But as soon as Picard comes on, the lights are off. You're shutting up and you're turning off your phone.
Yep. Proper cinema rules. Cinema courtesy rules.
It has to be. No, because, you know, it will be the first showing for many people there. Like yourself. Mm. There's not, you know, a lot of people in Ireland especially are not going to have Amazon Prime. So they're not going to watch it. Mm. They're going to, well, we'll wait till Saturday. Let's watch it as a group.
Yeah, exactly. And no talking to the screen. You know, not having a little chat with the screen yourself, or going, "Oh my God, did you have it to the whole room?" You know, it's
you can add your own.
Who actually does that? Watches on the cinema or screen. Do you actually do that?
There's people who do that.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I remember seeing Return of the Jedi in the Ambassador Cinema when it came out,
right?
And the scene where the Emperor is force lightning Luke. And there was a lady, and I can't remember if it was a son or a daughter behind me, and she was, "Oh my God, Darth Vader, do something! You know? And then Vader picks the Emperor up, and she went, "Oh, thank God!"
Yeah. The lights go down.
Some people, they forget they're in a group. You know, they just go into the mode of, they're glued to the screen. And it's great for someone to be able to get so into that storyline, that's great that they're so engrossed. But try and keep it in your head that there's other people around you.
You can add your own special effects after you've watched it, or when you're at home watching it for the second time.
They love the TV too much, or in front of their own TV too much, probably.
That brings me back to my days watching wrestling with my granddad. I would literally sit there and I'd have a commentary going on in my head. But my granddad would be on the edge, "Hit him! Go on, kick him! Throw him over there! Go on! Go on!" And I'm like, does he know this is fake?
can.
And well, I died when he was 83. I genuinely think to the day he died, he thought it was real.
Granddad, I hate to say this. The little man in the shiny box can't hear you.
my grandfather did exactly the same thing. He was mad into the hurling, and there was one day the TV in my grandparents' place broke, so he went next door. But what he used to do was, because he was an avid, GAA man himself, he used to play until he was too old too. But he used to move the chair with the camera as it moved. And you'd move the chair, so he'd be shifting around and going, go away, what are you doing? Pick it up. And he'd be bouncing, literally the chair would be leaving the floor. And I believe he went in next door to the Baileys and just to watch the match and did the same thing to their chair. And broke the chair.
Well, I will say this, okay? I'm going to hold my hand up here and say I'm a massive Formula One fan.
Okay.
And I do the odd, like, especially when they throw on the driver's view. You get this beautiful, now in modern Formula One, they have this beautiful view, which is literally, I'd say, about
the top of the steering wheel,
2 centimeters above the helmet. Mm. And as soon as the helmet goes, you're instinctually, your head goes...
Leaning?
Yeah. So you're going around a right-hander and your head's gone left and wait, what? What?
you're not playing it in VR.
Yeah, this is like... I might as well just throw on the VR.
As much as you want to be there, it's not happening.
But you're not grabbing the chair and then like leaning all the way to the left and
all the way to the right with gravity.
Around Monza, yeah.
You better believe it. Well, lads, obviously, you know, we've got Picard out this week.
Yeah.
We got a trailer there a little while ago of season 3 of Discovery.
Yes.
We've been told that we're getting
haven't seen it.
We won't give you any spoilers on it, don't worry.
Spoiler, they went to the future.
You bastard.
Jumping across a table like Robbie.
Bang, whip.
Ow!
Bang. Good old Batman sound effect. For me, I think it's safe to say that the future of Star Trek is bright. Would you agree with that?
We have the so Lower bright. Decks.
Yeah,
we have Lower Decks. Yeah. We have the unnamed Nickelodeon show.
We have Section 31.
Section 31. Like that's well. Three shows in development.
And there are rumored early fourth season renewal of Discovery as well.
Yeah. So you have two broadcasting simultaneously,
and nobody has taken Captain Pike off the table.
Nobody's like. No. In fact, there was an announcement there recently from Alex at some event in the US, where he was speaking of Picard and Discovery, and he also said that there are two unnamed live action shows currently in production.
Pre-production.
Make that distinction.
Everybody's jumping on that and going, one of them is a Pike show. It has to be.
Everyone loves them.
Anson Mount, Pike and Spock. Mm. Pike and Spock were just fantastic.
Well, I will say, if they brought Anson Mount and Zachary Quinto together, I would watch that all day.
No. Ethan Peck.
I'm not
a fan of Ethan Peck as Spock either. Yeah.
I liked Ethan Peck as emotional Spock with the beard.
Yeah.
He looked perfect. Doesn't have the chin.
I thought he looked great when he had a shave.
He looks like, it's like, where's the rest of your face?
It was a bit of a shock. It was a visual shock.
That was just pure and simply the fact that you, for a brief moment, you saw him without the beard. That's it.
If you saw a couple of episodes, would you get used to him wearing
the beard? Mm. And then you got this brief scene at the end, you know, where you see him without the beard, and it's a bit of a shock, and you're going,
I know it sounds weird. It was almost like watching Tarkin again in Rogue One, and it's like that weird uncanny valley. It's like, did they CGI the beard off? Is this a Henry Cavill mustache situation?
No, it is.
You know,
he's got a strong cleft chin.
Yeah. No, but like I say, I would love to see, and in fairness, I would love to see them not focus on Spock. If they do a Pike show, I would love to see it. I wanted it around Pike.
I want it to be
Rebecca Romijn. Yeah. And Anson Mount.
It's a Pike number one show. I think everybody wants Spock. Even though everyone loves Spock,
Spock's a recurring guest character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would like to see that. I would definitely like to see Pike on number one because great chemistry on screen. I thought they worked well together.
Yeah,
they look fantastic. The look of the new, it's the new old Enterprise.
Yes,
I think I was happy enough with the a few too many lights, but I did like the crossover, the new design of the older look.
And I will say this.
You take the Kelvin timeline one and you take that one and it's Listen, if you were to give,
I will say this to anyone who doesn't like set design or the costumology or the props design. I'm sorry, but if you had turned around to Gene Roddenberry and given him a blank check and said, off you go, do what you want, he would have done exactly the same thing and probably more.
Well, the Kelvin Bridge, the first time I saw the Bridge of the Enterprise from 2009's JJ verse, the Kelvin universe, it was like, the bridge by Apple.
The iBridge?
It's the Apple iBridge.
It's very white.
It's the Apple iBridge.
It's very white, yeah. It was very bright and it's like, yeah, and then JJ with the bloody scream.
That's easy. It's easier to see the blood splatter that way.
That's very true. Well, they're all red. They're all, anyone wearing red is screwed. You know?
Half the energy from the warp core went to
the lights and the
lens flares. The lens flares.
Oh, the lens flares. Oh, I just hate the lens flares.
Going back to the Discovery Enterprise.
Yeah.
And where you see the bridge and you see the work areas behind the consoles.
Yeah. Yes.
That was in the original design.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That corridor was there.
As you said, if Gene Roddenberry had the budget and the technology at the time, you would have seen that on the original show as well. Obviously, he couldn't do it. Mm. But it's not something that they came up with.
No.
It was in the original design.
They've taken the original set plans. Like, this is what I find hilarious is everyone's complaining, shall we say. Sorry, I won't use the word moaning. Everyone's disagreeing over the aesthetics of the new design.
What do you say?
Yeah, stop bitching. It's awesome. But they have literally taken the original sketches that Gene did for the set layout and gone, yeah, we can do that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all about the Benjamins. It's all about the money.
We don't have to. We don't have to do it in squares like we've done for our bridge.
Yeah.
Well, you know why? Because it was recently asked for the Cuchulain. It was suggested for
that we do the backdrop.
Well, not so much the backdrop. It was suggested by a certain someone I won't name to do a next generation. To which I went. God, do you know how
totally
difficult
my fault.
It is? Do you know what that involves?
We have access to a 7-point CNC machine, Jono.
do you know what is involved in designing and building that? There's all sorts of questions about there's all sorts of a big discussion you can have about screen accuracy and you know the road that we took which wasn't completely screen accurate and all that type
we
of jazz.
We made a toy that just looks cool.
We made an interactive device, you know. But why go that? Why go with the 60s? Because in the 60s, everything was nice and square.
Mm-hmm. And that's easy
it's
to cut
It's a lot
out.
Easier to cut and, you know, just cut and bodge wood together in angled shapes.
Yeah.
The new Enterprise Bridge, Pike's Bridge.
Is a little bit
lovely
more.
Swept curves, you know, everything's, it's either vacuum form molded or, you know, they'll get in there, they'll sculpt it first and then vacuum form it or whatever.
CNC machined.
They can CNC stuff through the computer so you can build it in the computer and then you can 3D print stuff. You know, there's so much more that they can do these days.
Yeah.
Doing a next generation seat, a captain's chair in the next generation. So many fans do it, and I've seen so many. The upholstery of that leather, it's not a wooden chair, you know what I mean? It's an upholstered leather, really complicated Andy Probert design.
That was built custom for the Enterprise.
Exactly. I wouldn't, I would freely admit here, and now I don't have the skills to build that chair. Or Riker and Troy's chair to get that type of a thing. The complications of the tactical sweep down around that whole thing. Good luck, you know.
What about the Defiant Bridge?
That's a room. That's a room and the chair.
The captain's chair.
I think by Defiant and Enterprise, those chairs were kind of chairs that were gubbins added onto.
They had to know what they were. Believe it or not, they had actually gone to junkyards. So DS9 was built obviously on a massive budget because most of the money was being taken up by finishing TNG and then they were kind of in pre-production for Voyager. So they did, they were out trying to find the captain's chair for the Intrepid class, which is just a car chair.
Yeah.
It's been ripped out of a car and stuck to a piece of balsa wood.
Don't get me started on Voyager's bridge.
It's the exact same chair.
It's the exact same chair.
Is it the divine chair?
Exact same chair. It's just got a frame built around it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And they did the runabout same chairs. What the runabout chairs? They've got to be some sort
of. Oh, they were Chevy chairs or something like that. Yeah, they were just Chevy chairs that were stuck into
a
frame.
Gubbins built around them. Yeah.
I think it's called Griebling.
Griebly's and Gubbins. But yeah, by the mid 80s, talk about the 60s and lovely angles. And it was, you know, why is it as wide as it is? Presumably because that was the length of board that came. Mm-hmm. So literally just, well, I don't have to cut that.
Yeah.
I just stick bits onto that. That's my width. I don't have to go, well, I want it to be, 8 foot six and 2/3, six eighths or something like that.
The vendor gave
it comes in 16 foot lengths or 8 foot lengths. So it's going to be 8 foot wide. Grand. That's it. And then every section is in 4 foot or eight foot sections.
But why is it 2 foot tall? Because that's the size an 8 foot board comes in.
Yeah. Why is it a foot wide? Why is it this? You know, so the least amount of cutting you have to do and the swift as it can go together. And that was kind of the attitude we had to take when we decided to do the classic bridge. Yeah. It's there's nice angles. It still took an awful lot of work. There was still a lot of rounding and sanding and stuff to go into it.
But I will say I'm excited to see what they do, because again, now going kind of throwing it back to what we're I can't wait to see what they're doing with the set design for Picard. Because
we've only seen small little glimpses of a ship that he's on. And
oh, yeah. I mean, just to go back to what you said, I'm really excited to see, and I hope I do, what they do with the interior of the classic Romulan warboard.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
You know, how will they recreate what we saw, let's say, in Balance of Terror?
Yes.
They just stick.
What will they reuse?
They just stick a GoPro in the corner of this triangular set. And then everyone, no matter what console they're using, they have to always talk and think in the direction of the GoPro.
Yeah. Well, that's what they did in the original.
It wasn't a GoPro. It was just a full 15-centimeter lens. Well, I think it's safe to say that, it's we're all fairly excited for this week.
Yeah.
Picard is going to be, I think it's going to be amazing. It's going to be great to see him, Sir Patrick Stewart, back on screen again.
Yeah.
With this brand new series, and I hope that it takes off. We've already been told it's season two.
Has been renewed.
It's renewed. I think
take that, Midnight's Edge. Doom saying.
Take that, Midnight's Edge, Doomcock, and
all those people.
Gobshites.
Star Trek is cancelled and dying.
I think they talked about 3 to 4 seasons in total. I don't think, you know, we're not going for 7 or 8 seasons.
As much as I hate to say it, I think Picard is a jumping point for the rest of their new TV universe.
Yeah, absolutely. With
due respect, and, you know, thanks to all the gods, demons, and whatever other hellspawn are keeping Sir Pat Stew alive, the man is 89. Like, he's 89.
89?
Or is he 89?
No, he's
70s,
isn't he?
No, he's
Googletron.
What age is he?
Well, while you're searching, I was just going to say that it is a very exciting time.
Yes,
you know, and from the premiere in the US, in the UK, you only got the first episode. In the US, they got 3 episodes.
Oh,
the first 3 they got to see, and the reactions that came out of that were overwhelmingly
good,
positive.
Okay,
and when I say positive, I mean my god!
Yeah, what I find very strange as well is that let's look at Star Wars for a second. The sheer amount of rumors and spoilers and things that were coming out from that last movie were unbelievable. Mm. Very little came out about Mandalorian, but they just did a really good job with the Mandalorian, kind of to keep everything secret. And you look at Star Trek, and I haven't seen or heard a spoiler. I'm sure there's some out there. But I haven't seen or heard any of them, and I'm very happy that I haven't seen or heard any.
Well, there's something I want to say about that. Just to go back to what we were discussing.
How old is he?
He is 80 in July this year.
Okay.
So he's 79.
79.
He's turning 80 this year. So, I mean,
Captain Picard's birthday is July 13th, and he'll be 80 this year.
Wow. Due respect to Sir Pat Stew, but there's not many actors who go kind of beyond... I mean, there's not many actors who go beyond 75, really, that...
Well, some actors will go. Christopher Lee, they just go until they drop.
True.
Maggie Smith says she wants to go until she can't.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know,
but again, so Christopher Lee and Maggie Smith are film actors.
Mm.
they're not going to have to be on set.
Maggie Smith was. She did Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey.
And it's not like she did Downton Abbey 20 years ago. She did Downton Abbey now.
Yeah.
So that's fairly grueling. Yeah,
I mean, maybe we'll get four seasons.
You see, there's people. The actors.
They were predicting three, weren't they?
I think they were predicting three. And there's a potential fourth on the board, I think.
Okay.
All depends on Pat Stew himself.
Well, let's talk about that. I'm going to finish up on that this point. Let's say we get three seasons. Okay. Do you think that we will see the death of Captain Picard in this?
Oh, good question. Mm. Good question. I will cry and cry and cry if they do that. But they'd really have to do...
It would have to be the hardest thing to do, the send-off of send-offs. The best.
Yeah.
They'd have to get everybody on board.
You can't just, you know, fall off an iron bridge and hit a rock.
I bridge will fall on them or something. Yeah.
I mean, spin in the air three times.
Those damn bridges.
it would be irony of irony if you fell off the Sean O'Casey Bridge and died.
I don't think so.
Was it fun?
Personally, I don't think so myself. I don't think they would kill him.
No, I don't think so.
But there's always that possibility.
I
think there's too much storytelling potential between the comics, the books, mm-hmm. the online side of things. They
killed off Kirk, but William Shatner was just like, no!
Yeah.
If you don't give me my stories, I'll damn right write them myself.
But you see, there's nothing saying they won't do with Sir Pat Stew that they haven't done with the other actors, which mm-hmm. is invite them to further the story in Star Trek Online as a voice actor.
Yeah.
It's a lot less strenuous
than actually
being
Pat Stew will do it.
I would imagine stuff like that is down to budget as well.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be down to budget. But again,
imagine trying to pay him to come on and do that.
I don't know, 75 for an autograph.
You know what? No, actually, you know what?
They've had Jason Isaacs. They've had Leonard Nimoy.
But look at previous Star Trek games.
Yeah.
He's done them.
He's done them, but will he do them now?
That's it. At 80 years of age, it's like, oh.
Yeah, again,
it's like, you know, well, even 20 years ago, when he was in Blackpool, he didn't do an autograph signing or a photo shoot or anything like that. He has done them in the States. Frank's been lucky enough to catch him at Dragon Con.
He does them in Birmingham. He did them in Birmingham a couple of years ago.
He has done them. This time around, he did. He was running off to another event.
He was going to Paris Comic Con.
Yeah, he was doing a press tour. Mm. So, you know, we got a guest talk, and you could pre-buy a pre-signed autograph and stuff like that. So he's eluded me. Now, they were really expensive, 100 quid or something?
105 quid for a pre-signed poster.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's it. Like, even 20 years ago, he was charging 50 quid when everyone else was only charging 15.
Now, at the TNG reunion, he was only charging £50.
Right.
So that was London 2014 at the TNG cast reunion.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I wouldn't mind paying it if it was personalised, it had my name on it as well, but just pre-signed for 105? No.
No.
Well, you see, it was the pre-signed and it was the Picard release trailer with the dog.
Yeah, but still.
I know.
To Jerry from Sir Pat, you know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Or get one of Doug Jones's autograph, which is basically an essay.
Yeah, well, yeah.
and a big hug and you know, his moisturised hands rubbing over your face.
And if you're really lucky, you get to give him a jockey back down the
Comic-Con floor. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And he sits and tells stories on the bridge.
That's why Doug Jones is great. Well, lads, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, we have to stop, Jerry. What's going on?
We have to stop. Well, we have to stop. We're going about 7 hours now.
Before we do,
yes.
What was your favourite episode of Star Trek?
Get another cup of tea, guys. We're going to be here.
Well, I tell you what, I will answer that question, but I will say that I am going to have you guys back in here with a few more of the USS Kukulna lads, because we have to do this debate, lads. We have to do it. We have to get it out there. What's the best series? Who's the best captain, and what is the best episode?
I'll get my swords.
I'll get the guards in for that one. Don't mind security. Right, I'll answer this now. It's between two, and they're double headers.
Mm-hmm.
Best of Both Worlds.
Yep.
Loved Best of Both Worlds. And you can't see this, ladies and gentlemen. John was literally ready to pounce. I love The Way of the Warrior.
You better give me the right answer.
The Way of the Warrior was a
I love The Way of the Warrior. Absolutely fantastic.
The last 20 minutes of that episode, the two-parter, the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I think it's some of my most watched. Skip the rest of the preamble.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a lot I'd
skip through. Was like, oh, I loved the fact that big massive battle. They put a lot into the budget for that episode.
The Vorka and the two birds of prey and
absolutely fantastic.
20 years later or 25 years later or whatever it is, I can't stand the hand to hand simply because of what I do for a living. Yeah. But still, it's a great last 20 minutes.
Yeah. Before we end, I'll just say, how the hell does a Klingon die from a punch?
How do three Klingons die from one Starfleet officer who's managed to take a Batleth off one of their already dead guys?
Yeah, there you go.
And when you do an uppercut with a Batleth, how does it not shave someone's face off?
There you go.
Plot armor weakness.
And also one other thing, it's something I just don't agree with in terms of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Why is Colomini always the punching bag? He gets his ass kicked in so many episodes. Like, come on!
I would surmise one of two things. Colm doesn't want to do fight choreography himself. Yeah. I would advocate that. It's simply a thing of Colm could maybe not be arsed and say, "Yeah, it's just one punch and I'm down," and then I can lie on the floor while everybody else is exhausted.
He also had a bad back while they were filming, so
you know, when you have a bad back, you have a bad back. That's it. Yeah. So it could be easily. I'm not taking anything away from Colm because I love Colm. That's actually someone who's eluded me. I do have his autograph from a long time ago, but I never got to meet him.
One of my favorite sayings on the Deep Space Nine set was there was actually a saying going around the Deep Space Nine set. What are we filming this week? It's an O'Brien Must Suffer episode.
Well, the best thing about the one thing I love about O'Brien that he introduced to Star Trek. Bollocks.
Twice. Did he say it twice?
When was the second time?
Season 3, just when they brought the Defiant back, something happened in engineering and you hear just the X.
Oh,
off
yeah.
The
well,
back end of the engine room.
It was when Molly got trapped in a time continuum thingy in a cave. That's when, like, because I remember when that went out in 97 or whatever it was. And I was distracted for a second. And you just hear him because he's out the end of the cave entrance and it's a distance thing. And you just hear, "Oh, bollocks!" And I just went, "Did he just say that?"
Yeah.
And I would just add to that now, if you haven't checked as yet, then you have to check out Roddy Doyle's Star Trek on Facebook.
Oh, yes. The Roddy Doyle
Star Trek. Oh, we mentioned that the last time as well.
Absolutely fantastic. Mm. But lads, I tell you, we're going to leave it there. We will come back. We will have that big debate.
No, I'm not going. I want to keep talking.
Well, we're going to have partitions in between you all the next time because this was a lovely chat, lads, I have to say. Absolutely loved this chat. It wasn't as heated as the last chat we had.
It's not as divisive.
No, but I imagine when we start talking about the best series and somebody starts mentioning the Orville, which is just going to be great. Chaos.
What? I will say.
The what?
Hang on, you just bought the Orville on Blu-ray.
only so I could throw it on a fire.
Hey! He's off in HMV and he bought it. Oh yeah, I bought the Orville. Oh, did you now? I will describe just before we leave, because we have myself and Frank, you know, we listened to the previous podcast and you can hear what we're laughing about here. But I am wearing a Deep Space Nine Niners cap.
Niners cap, yeah.
And Frank is wearing his Discovery cap.
Which, by the way,
we're both showing our colours. And Robbie is wearing a lanyard with USS Enterprise
1701.
No bloody A, B, C.
And Jerry is wearing fuck all.
No, he's wearing
clothes. Jerry's wearing clothes. No, Jerry is wearing clothes.
Right. Which is right. This is right. You heard just...
I'm wearing clothes. I'm just not wearing anything Star Trek.
And this is why it's an audio podcast and there's no video accompanying it.
Well, that you know of. But lads, honest to God, thank you very much for coming in. It's an absolutely fantastic chat. I loved it. And to the viewers, the listeners, we do have a couple of badges for you. There is a camera, yeah. We do have a couple of badges from you, courtesy of the lads from the USS Cucullin. They are personalised Cucullin badges. Lads, these are rare. You know, you can't just go and buy them in the shop. And we're going to do a little competition for them. So, lads, I need a question to give to the listeners that they have to answer correctly to win one of these badges. So give us a question.
Oh, you want like a...
I want a question
like
from...
A trivia question,
from Star Trek. Not too difficult.
Not too difficult. Okay. Because I love the little...
How many roles has... Jeffrey Combs had in Star Trek.
Oh, that's a good one.
Overall.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. How many characters has Jeffrey Combs played in between the shows?
Every single season. Every single show... The whole lot. How many
characters has Jeffrey Combs played, and what are they? Who are they?
That's a lot of names to type
out.
Just
how many?
Okay,
right. Yeah. We'll go with the question. Jeffrey Combs, who played Wei-Yun, we'll give Wei-Yun. How many characters in total did he play in all the Star Trek series that he has been in?
Deep Space Nine question. Maybe it should have been a Picard centric one.
It's not too. It's okay.
I'll give you an alternate. Just now.
All right, go for an alternate.
Right, so here's an alternate. It's a pretty easy one if you watch the episodes. What was the name of the female character that Picard got together with in Captain's Holiday?
I tell you what, we're going to go with that one instead, actually, because I like that one. Yeah, what was the name of the character that Captain Picard got with on Captain's Holiday? Lads, I want you to DM me. It is Instagram/Jerry_Soul. Is it forward slash? Is that Instagram?
Don't tell me.
Isn't
it
just hashtag?
I think it's just DM and then it's just at Jerry Soul.
Well, okay, go.
I'm new to Instagram, so I don't know.
There you go. I actually don't know. But I know my username is Jerry_Soul. So get me on Instagram, Jerry_Soul. You'll get me there. I did get rid of the previous page and it's just gone with that one there. So Jerry_Soul on Instagram. Get your answers in. Who was the female character that Captain Picard got with on Captain's Holiday.
Captain's Holiday.
Okay. Yeah. Well, lads, thank you so much for coming in. It's been a blast having you in again, and I can't wait to have you in again. I'll have my guns with me the next time. Dave, it's great to be back. It's great to have you back.
I know. Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, from myself and the lads from the USS Cullen and Dave, you've been Nerdy, I've been Jerry. Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Live long and prosper.